Well, I think we can go ahead and get started, and you know, we can make this a shorter call, which is fine. I think that you know, I even though I'm giving you guys these two chapters to look at for today, I will be sending out the entire draft biennial plan, hopefully probably Tuesday afternoon of next week, in preparation for Friday's council meeting.
Okay.
So you guys are just getting the first crack at these two chapters.
Okay.
Part of the reason why I wanted to give you guys these is because for the performance measures chapter, we just discussed performance measures during our last conference call on the 17th. And so I wanted to make sure that I was kind of incorporating the ideas that were discussed at that last meeting. And so we can just start. I mean, we can't approve the meeting minutes, but I can just go over the gist of what was discussed during that meeting. So in terms of our June 17th meeting, we discussed the draft Chapter 5 of the biennial plan, and I got good feedback from everyone on that and have incorporated their changes into Chapter 5. And then during the discussion on performance measures, it seemed as though kind of the way that the conversation was going, that the committee talked about, you know, because our recommendations have yet to be implemented because they haven't come out yet, there isn't really a way to operationalize them into performance measures, and there's nothing really to quantify yet. So we talked about establishing some broad goals and objectives to a chapter rather than numerical performance measures, and, you know, basically providing a brief narrative of what we hope is accomplished with these recommendations that we're putting out for the first time. So given that, I drafted Chapter 11, which, as you can see, I had two paragraphs kind of explaining it was taking into account that this council, being an advisory body to the governor and to the legislature, providing these recommendations so that those entities may choose to adopt the recommendations found within the plan. And then if that does happen in the future, the council can take an active role in evaluating and critiquing this, how successful the implementation of these recommendations has been. However, currently, we basically have our hopes for where the recommendations go. And so I came up with, I think there are nine goals, and these goals are basically trying to summarize the previous chapters of the plan. So kind of each goal is taking into account a major topic that we recommended something on. So I would love to get you guys' feedback about, do you think that this performance measure chapter works? And are there any type of are there any major topics that we have discussed and are making recommendations on that I didn't include in the goals?
I thought it was fine. I don't think you can go beyond this, Mark. I'm assuming what you just said, that in the preceding chapters you're going to see these recommendations as they're presented here, and I recognize a couple at the end with the with our subcommittee, but that's what you were saying, correct?
Right.
These are just kind of a summary of the recommendations turned into goals. So I think that's the best we can do. I agree. There's nothing we in performance measures. You don't want to. You don't want to measure something you don't have control over achieving success. I mean, that's for sure. It's kind of like, you know, getting a goal that someone else is going to perform the activity, and that's kind of silly.
I think that was, because I brought this chapter before the Policy and Barriers Committee for discussion, and I think that they have came to the same conclusions that you know, we should state in this chapter where the proper authority is for implementing any recommendations that we give, and that, you know, to defer to, you know, if for example, there is a decision by the legislature to implement one of these recommendations, and they give the responsibility for that implementation to a particular state agency, it would be the state agency's responsibility then to figure out a proper performance measure that's, you know, realistic given the amount of resources that have been allocated to them for that program or, you know, whatever it may be.
Yeah, well, that usually works itself out. I mean, as you know, in state government, you get the program, you get the money, and then you work with LBD and others to you get the option to propose measures, and they concur or whatever, and then you're off to tracking that. So I think it's fine to me. I don't know what else we can do.
Okay.
Other than just act ignorant of the process. You never want to put out a document where you're ignorant of the real world process, because people lose a little bit of credibility then.
Right, and that's, I think, why we wanted to just, at the very first paragraph, stick it out there that we recognize where the authority lies with this, and to not try to fool ourselves into thinking that we should be trying to come up with some, you know,
something that's not substantial.
Right, something that would be very unrealistic at this point.
Right.
Okay, so that sounds good. Amy, if you have any comments, if you don't, we can go on to chapter 7.
No, I think it looks fine. We can go on.
Okay. So chapter 7 is the best practices research, and I think you guys will probably recognize that some of this research was given to you at the very first council meeting we ever had in November, identifying state programs, program overviews, and eligible populations, as well as eligible services provided within those programs. And what I did to take it a step further is looking at the program catalyst, you know, what started this program in that particular state, program highlights about the accomplishments of the program within that state, and then examples of developments that have been created. So kind of the way that state operationalized their initial policies and initial program idea. So that's what's been added to the original research that was done back in November. And I also narrowed it down based on the fact that the Policy and Barriers Committee thought long and hard about, you know, our definition of service-enriched housing, and how really the way that we decided to define service-enriched housing does exclude assisted living models. And given that feedback, I did actually take a couple of state programs out that were focused exclusively on assisted living, and kept those programs which allowed a little bit more flexibility for the type of housing model available. So that's why right now we have Iowa, Illinois, New Jersey, and North Carolina. And as you can see, some of the states have been more productive than others in implementing their programs. But I think that I hope that it gives a good overview of how one can operationalize this idea of service-enriched housing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Are there any thoughts about this chapter?
No, I thought it looked good. I guess they're all still operational. I don't know if that has to be the case, but I was just curious. Do you happen to know, Ashley? I didn't know if that was evident from the research or whatever. They're all kind of in place still, or?
Yes. Yes, I think that for some of them, the funding is less consistent than others.
Oh.
Like, for example, New Jersey and North Carolina, I believe that the funding has been built into the annual appropriation, or the not the appropriation, the annual entitled amount that they receive through that program. So they receive consistent funding, and that's kind of a, it's a kind of more stable for sure thing. The Senior Living Revolving Loan Fund that Iowa has, I believe, is the funding is not as consistent just because it's whatever they get back from the development that can be put back into the revolving loan. So, I mean, I think some programs probably are more prolific than others due to the stability of funding sources. But as far as I know, the programs are still in existence and still operational.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is Elizabeth. Hi there. What order do you have these in? Is there a particular hierarchy that you have these?
They're alphabetical.
Well, actually, Illinois is probably first. Illinois is being first in this alphabet. That's what threw me off. I was like, okay.
I guess I really didn't have an order.
And then
order.
I thought, well, maybe you know, it was in some preferential order.
No, honestly,
okay.
I guess I should, if it's going to be alphabetical, I should have Illinois first, but... Yeah, there's no real order here to speak of.
Ashley, you probably use the abbreviation order, IA, first.
Yeah. There we go. That's it.
I'm taking you here.
There you go.
All right. So... if there isn't anything to add on this chapter, really I think that we're kind of wrapping up the whole conference call series, and just trying to move forward with, here TDHC staff is moving forward with trying to bring together all these chapters into the plan, make sure everything flows well, and that we covered all our bases, and then get the draft of the entire plan out to you, like I said, hopefully by Tuesday of next week, so that you guys have a chance to at least look at maybe what the other committee has done that you haven't seen yet. I think that's probably the most important thing for the cross-agency committee, to be able to see what the Policy and Barriers Committee has come up with. That way, when we get to our meeting on Friday, if there are some, you know, important issues that maybe you feel like were left out of chapters that were under the purview of that committee, that you guys can be able to comment on. So that's I think where we're going next. Is there anything that we want to talk about today that maybe is important to include before July 9th?
Can you... Actually, when is that starting? I have, unfortunately, two dates on my calendar, or two times.
I think it's 10 a.m.
10 a.m.? Okay.
Okay, because I had 9 and 10, and I wasn't sure which one was right.
Okay.
I apologize for that.
I put my own up there, and I see yours, but I just wanted to confirm it. I got yours that you sent out, but then I had my own much earlier that I had posted.
I think originally we were talking about, you know, 9, but it's definitely 10.
And I think that part of the reason is we want to make sure that all those people who are coming from outside of Austin have time to get there and fly in or drive in or whatever it is.
And also, we might not have this draft ready until maybe Wednesday. We just found out that our agency is going to be closed on Monday. So we actually just said Tuesday, but it might be Wednesday. But we'll do our best to get it to you at least 24, if not 48, 72 hours ahead.
48, maybe 72. Yeah.
Tell me the rest.
There you go. Think of that.
2-day weekend. All right. Yeah.
Well, obviously is a brief call. The plan for Friday, and then we're just going to start with, like, chapter 1 and get through them, or what are we doing? How are we going to do Friday? Do you know yet? Yeah, I think that what's going to happen is that I will just walk us through the plan chapter by chapter, you'll probably give, like, just a brief overview of, you know, the outline and how the structure of the plan is set up. And then go through each chapter, and I'm assuming that for those chapters that have already been reviewed during this conference call process, there won't be too much to talk about. But for those that haven't been seen by both committees, we'll probably have some more discussion on.
Okay. And then we'll have our quarterly council meeting again in August, right?
And the purpose of that meeting is, I mean, in terms of what, you know, I want to be able to compile all the feedback we get on July 9th and make those edits, and then have the time for the plan to actually go out for public comment, and then have August 9th be kind of the final vote to approve it and send it off to the bodies that are required to see it.
All right.
Okay. Yeah. And I think also August 9th will be a good time to talk about next steps, kind of where we want to, you know, focus our efforts. Because I know there's been talk at various previous council meetings about doing more visits to places that are seen to be best practices, such as going to San Antonio, going to Haven for Hope, and seeing, you know, what they're doing with integrating their service provision, or you know, getting other working groups or other committees that are doing efforts that parallel ours to come give reports on what they've been doing, things like that. I think we can have that discussion on in August about those next steps.
Okay.
Well, if we have something that you said as practices, I was thinking, as I will, and I'm in New Jersey and North Carolina. But that made me think, if there's some best practices in the state, I want to do this in the country.
Right.
Or not. I don't know.
I mean, we reference in many different chapters some in-state, you know, either pilot programs or, you know, different types of you know, things that we consider best practices. I think that we do reference that across the chapters. Like, for example, as you'll see when you get the biennial plan draft, the chapter that the Policy and Barriers Committee put together on policy recommendations includes examples that they felt were good from both out of state as well as in state.
Right.
Okay. Well, thanks, guys.
Yeah.
I'm out.
Thank you. Thanks for all the hard work.
All right. Bye, guys.
Okay. Bye.